We recording now. Are we recording? Do you know what?
I'm so emotional about the recording.
Do you feel emotionally ready, Mr.? Is that you, Mr. Hong? Mr. Hong has got it going on. Philly Hong has got it going on.
I saw a friend yesterday with Pearlie, and I haven't seen her since last year in Cambodia.
What are you talking about?
So just as the COVID-19 pandemic started, you remember, you guys, when I brought Pearlie here to get her paperwork done, and she moved from Keswick to Singapore in 2019.
She did not.
Yes, she did.
Is that her husband. True story?
That's the thing, yes. So now she's holding her little garden party wedding thing, so all the people of Keswick can give her some gifts and stuff, and so she's back.
What do we call the people from Keswick?
Keswickians. That's what they want to call themselves.
I don't think we do.
Yes, we do.
I don't think we should call them that. I think it demeans the Keswickians.
What are you talking about? I graduated from their high school.
It's a Mao day, Mr. Hong.
It's a Mao day,
Mr. Hong. It's hilarious because we basically spent the entire day yesterday
really
finding Chinese food that she misses
to chew. Bom, 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 bom. How do I turn off the notifications? Somehow all the notifications on my phone have been turned on.
You have to go to settings for that. You have an Android phone, right?
Yes.
So you can either deactivate them by, you know, going into those notifications right now. There's a little like thing on the menu on the right. So each notification.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Something happened the other day. I'm just going to turn off the notifications. But now I'm getting all the notifications.
Did you get an update to your phone?
I don't recall doing it, but
see. For me, whenever you go live to Facebook now, I get this thing that says this meeting is being live streamed.
Yeah, I got rid of it. Yeah.
Yeah, I never used to get that until I updated my Zoom.
Yeah, same with me.
Okay.
Same with me. And, you know, we've been talking, you and I and Dan and Phil for, I don't know, you came on about 15 minutes ago, and it wasn't until this second... This very second that this thing started to make the bup noises. So you guys can talk about all the different things you want, but I know it's in this Facebook thing somewhere. I can tell you right now. Hey, but before we get started, I want to tell you, there's a couple of things. We were all going to get together tomorrow night, Philly, Fred, Dan, Boone, and me. But because of the circumstances surrounding our technical issues, which I'm not sure people have heard about them, Fred, if you think people are aware of the technical issues, you know, because it's been so subtle. Ones. All the what?
All but the dead ones.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so what we're going to do tomorrow night is Phil's going to stay at home. So is Fred. Dan will be here. We're going to have a... It really is... I'm really looking forward to it because Mike has done a lot of work.
Yes.
A lot of people have, you know, I guess contributed, recorded things for us. And it's going to be really just the five of us sharing some memories and listening to some people. You know, so even though it's presented by Dewar, I'll be wearing my latest Dewar. You guys dressed in your Dewar finery. We won't be actually in the studio. So that aspect of it has now been switched because of these technical issues.
Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating show. Sit back and listen to people celebrate us for an hour or so. It's great.
No,
it's
going to
be wonderful.
I hope you get yourself some nice beers or whatever it is you drink at night, because it's going to be longer than an hour. Okay?
I got a fresh bottle of Glenlivet here. Maybe I should crack it open and become a drunken mess throughout the show.
That would be great.
That'll be the sub theme. Okay, Fred's had two shots. How drunk is he now?
That's right. Fred's going to take a shot for every positive comment.
Did you ever do that? So many more. We never did that. Or did we? The, you know, that morning show thing
where you get drunk over the
with the breathalyzer and you take a shot every and then see how fast you get drunk on the air. Did we ever do that?
No. I don't think we did.
Yeah.
I know there were some mornings, and maybe I'm thinking about the podcast years where we drank wine during the show.
Yeah.
Because one of our clients, Churchill Cellars, for you people who have been with us for 10 years, that was one of our big clients. What's that, bud?
got a buzz on, yeah.
Well, so I don't remember what time we were starting in those days, Phil, but I do remember Freddie and I getting a bit of a morning wine buzz on.
Oh yeah, we started at 7 and everything. Yeah, and so the wine guest would be like 7:30.
Yes, later on the show. All I remember, Phil, is that once we started drinking the wine, we got drunk pretty easily.
Howard, did you ever in your broadcast career show up for work impaired?
Not once. No.
Yeah. You know, I think I did in my very first year, the first Christmas party we had. You know, I was young. I was in the business. We had a good time. I stayed up too late, drank too much. And I think I actually, well, I don't, what am I saying? I think I showed up at 6 o'clock because it was a weeknight Christmas party, as many of those are. And I was still somewhat impaired. In fact, I still had like streamers in my hair.
Come on. Yeah. Jesus.
So, but I could walk. I could walk to the station. And I never again. I just say that because some of the podcasts I'm listening to from former guys like Jake Edwards and Jerry Forbes and, you know, and Jesse and Gene, there's a lot of stories about the wildlife while working in Toronto on the air.
Yeah.
I was never. Anyway, the point is that happened to me like I think once in the first year, and I learned my lesson right there.
No, I never showed up. I mean, part of it, I think, I was just too, I don't know, you know, paranoid or too.
Yeah.
I do remember that I did a few all-night shows in Vancouver. Not drunk, but like the guy that was on before me, we smoked a joint, you know. You know, and I remember being a little high, but I was on the air for 6 hours, so I was a little high, and then it wore off, and, you know, at 4 a.m, I'm back to pounding coffee to try and stay awake.
It's funny stuff that would have been, not that it would have been tolerated, but maybe overlooked 30 or 40 years ago, would never be now.
Oh, no, I know.
Something that might even be a joke in the hall, so-and-so, hey, went right from the club right to the morning show. Now it would not be tolerated.
No. No, it would not. Phil, are you emotionally ready to start this show?
I can't relate to this, because if you guys remember back in 2013, I mentioned that I'd never been drunk before. Ever.
No, we can't relate
in
to that.
Life. Never.
Still?
Never.
We should fix that.
Oh, I can't.
No, we should. We should get Phil hammered.
Pearlie's father was an alcoholic, so I said we won't drink for the rest of our lives.
For the rest of your lives. Sweet. Okay. Yeah. So he was an alcoholic, so you won't drink.
Yes. Because it was a really abusive relationship. That's what it was, basically.
Well, I could see that. And if Pearlie was sort of somewhat terrorized by a drunken father, then to have that brought back into our life might be not the best thing. So he's doing it at a... Listen, how convenient. What if it was me that was in that situation? That would be painful. Phil, it's nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
He didn't drink anyway.
Yeah, how convenient you don't drink.
I don't.
All right, well, let's start. You know what? Now that the microphones are sounding like the 1940s, let's start the fucking show.
Okay, so it's Facebook.
You're the bee's knees. The following episode of Humble and Fred is brought to you by the Retirement Sherpa, Gig Sky, The Chambers Plan, Health Gauge, Bodog, and a new sponsor, Doer, D-U-E-R, the presenting sponsor of Humble and Fred's 10th anniversary podcast. If you'd like to talk to Humble and Fred, well, our Facebook account is Humble and Fred Radio. And now from the remote headquarters of the Humble and Fred Show, here are Humble and Fred.
Everybody, welcome to the Humble and Fred Show, when the microphones are from the swinging times of the 1940s. These boys are so old, they were teenagers when this music was popular. All right. You know, I enjoyed yesterday at a really nice time with a friend of mine and his grandson. There were so many sweet moments, but one of my favorite moments, I don't know about you, but you know, Fred and I don't know that we don't really get a chance to share a beer with one another anymore because, you know, I don't drink. And the Fred man and I haven't really been around each other too much, I think. I don't know. Is that the first time we've had a... Because I got a non-alcoholic Bud, which is, you know, decent. Not the best, but not the worst. And you had yourself...
A Rolling Rock?
Yeah, and we got to sort of... I don't know. I like that. It's my favorite. It's weird. I don't miss alcohol, but I do kind of miss some of the rituals around it, you know? Having a nice beer with your buddy.
I agree totally, and, you know, it was such a lovely setting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that golf course at Glen Cairn, not only is it a lovely golf course, but just the scenery around it, especially when you look out towards the escarpment, and in the fall.
Yeah,
are
it's
you
beautiful,
kidding
huh?
me?
Yeah, it's good, nice.
They could sell tickets just for that. Forget the golf.
But I really enjoyed that part, you know, where it's like, because I, you know, even my kids, I was really surprised. Both of my children were here on Monday, and I had some Heineken Zeros, which are also nice beers.
Yes.
And neither of my daughters drink, and neither of my children drink. Charlie for going on 3.5 years. Spencer quit shortly after me, so she's coming up to 6 years. And I wasn't sure where they were in terms of the non-alcoholic beer, but all three of us had it. It was great, actually. You know, Rachel had a glass of wine, and we all drank non-alcoholic beer. And I think the ritual of alcohol is something that people with alcohol issues have. I think you kind of miss it sometimes. And like I said, I was thinking about our day yesterday, and I thought about that. The fact that I could have a beer with you was nice.
No, it was lovely. The whole afternoon was lovely. Very, very, what's the word? Interesting, fascinating, watching you, you know, school. What's the word? Instruct John on, you know, beginner golf. It was great.
Yeah, he's quite something, man. That kid is something else. Just you know who he reminds me of so much, Danny.
Oh yeah,
not so much looks wise because he looks, you know, Danny's got doll's looks. John definitely has yours, but he's got that spirit. You know, not a lot of 8-year-olds are that open and comfortable and friendly. He's only met me in person. John has only met me a couple of times. But we were like fast buddies. I picked him up in the car to let him drive the cart, and then he and I kind of hung out on the range for an hour. And the first thing I would tell you, and I'm not just saying that because you're my buddy, but he's got some crazy hand-eye coordination. Like all the stories about him picking up hockey and jump shots, and you know, sometimes you hear those stories from grandparents. You're like, all right, easy now. But he is. He's got good hand eye, man.
Yeah, and golf is so complex. And the things you told him yesterday, and watching him, you know, sort of concentrate and try to pull them off, it was just fun. It was interesting to watch. Because he's the type of kid, Howard, that will be in the backyard today.
Yeah.
You know, like standing up straighter and thinking about it and... Because he likes to be successful.
Oh yeah,
like I've seen him take backhand shots and backhand shots and backhand shots until he's satisfied that he can do it. So that's what's going to happen.
Well, I can already tell that because you know, and really for parents listening or grandparents, and you want to introduce your kids to golf, John had already had some instruction. Is you know he could already swing a club, and I gave him just the smallest little stuff, and then we just had fun. You know, I whispered in his ear where you know we were pretending that Grandpa couldn't hear. And I just went whispers, okay, now John, I want you to hit the shit out of this. He laughed, right? He loved that stuff. So,
When you did that, I thought you had said, you know, you swing better than Grandpa.
No. I was pretending. I was like, okay, don't tell Grandpa, but what I want you to do on this next shot is just hit the shit out of it. But, you know, I didn't give him very many things other than a little posture stuff. And then we just had fun. I tricked him. That thing we did where I had him lay the club flat and then just close it slightly. That's just little things to get him away from thinking there's only one way to hit the ball. And kind of he hit two or three yesterday where both you and I, not that I was shocked, but they were uncommonly good for an 8-year-old swinging a golf club. Toward the end, he hit a couple, like, right on the button, and both of us could hear the sound.
The first thing you got him to do, he was bending his knees too much. In that weird posture, if you want to call it that, when I took him golfing, see, I wouldn't know that. I just took the attitude, go and swing away, because who am I to tell someone I don't know about golf posture? I don't. With that, let's call it bad habit, like, I've seen him hit the ball like 75, 100 yards. And the interesting thing is now when you correct that, again, it's going to be interesting to watch him over the next little while, what's left of the season or opportunity, because he'll keep that in mind and he'll do it. Yeah. Because ultimately, when he does it and the ball goes even farther, he'll love it.
Yeah. You know, I could tell he's, you know, what you said about he'll keep doing it until he's satisfied. You know, there's some people that are just driven. And that's, you know, it can be a good quality and it's a bad quality, but for athletics, it's a great quality because you'll keep doing it until you have it down. So we hung out for about an hour on the range, hitting balls and all kinds of shots, and it was fun. And then we went over to the green where Papa and I had a beer, and he and I were dicking around hitting putts and stuff. But the weirdest thing was, and I thought about this when I was going home, the thing he's going to practice the most is I was showing him this little trick where you take your putter and you just twist it against your foot and then pick the ball up as you raise your foot in the ball. It's a little thing. You just sort of turn the putter and then pick it up at the same time. And I took his putter and I did it because I can't do it with my putter. That's not the right kind. Well, don't you know, like, he wouldn't stop doing it until he figured out. I guarantee he's doing that now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
For the last 10 minutes we were there, every time we stopped putting, he's sort of turned around and did it until he got it. He basically got to, you sort of pick the ball up and catch it. Anyway, it was pretty fascinating watching him.
And another classic moment, you know, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. When he swung and hit the ball, he farted and thought that was hilarious.
Oh, my God.
Remember that moment?
Mm-hmm. The first time he did it, I didn't know what he had done. So he goes to hit the ball and he just farts literally the same. You and I start laughing. And then we start just talking about farts, you know, the way guys do.
Of course. Yeah. And then you asked him the classic question, have you ever heard your grandpa fart?
That's right.
Yes, many times.
Yes. Yes, he didn't hesitate to answer that question. In fact, I think he said, yes, some rumblers.
Yeah, anyway, it was a great day. And
What was the, just quickly before we finish it, I mean, and again, I've been asking you to do this. It was more, I got as much out of it or more than he did. I really enjoyed it. And I was very careful not to do too much and not to get too complicated. But so, and then because I know when I was a kid, I loved to do that. At the end, when you were getting his clubs away, I let him drive the cart around the parking lot and, you know, and even that surprised me, to be honest with you. I didn't think, like, I said to him, have you done this before? He goes, yeah, a couple times. Because, again, he has good hand-eye. He was, you know, we were making circles and little loops around the parking lot. I'm like, I didn't realize 8-year-olds could drive a car.
Well, I took him golfing a couple of times, and I believe Danny did, and each time he gets to drive the cart. So, yeah, that was not new to him.
Well, he's very good at that, too. So I was going to say, my takeaway was I enjoyed it, and I hope he did, too. It was fun for me.
We loved it. In fact, he said to me driving out, can we do this again, Papa? And I said, oh, I'm sure John will get another opportunity to golf with Howard.
Anytime.
Yeah, and I also thought, you know, over the years, we've been pretty lucky in this business. Not that this is necessarily tied to the business, but we've really been able to do a lot of things that, you know, other people haven't been able to do or get the opportunity. And I just thought, you know, even him, he loves sports and he loves golf. And I was able to take him to a golf course like that and let him spend time with someone of your ability. You know, that's pretty cool. Not a lot of people, kids that age, would get that chance, you know?
No,
you
I just wouldn't. Well, and the fact that you and I, you know, have a... Oh, hang on a second. Hold on a minute. Here we go.
How about that fire?
All right, there we go. And now we're back to the 1940s, where guys and gals swung the club, and then they tripped the light fantastic.
It's a sports from Scotland.
Oh, hang on a second. I'm back to the future. You know, the fact that it's you and I, and, you know... I mean, here's how special it was. I don't know why I mentioned this to Fred. Yesterday at our golf course, for the last 3 or 4 days, the range has been closed. So I get there, and I had arranged with Fred to show up around 3:30, quarter to 4. And when I got there, the head pro, Mike Marshall, said, "Hey, dude, did you not see the email I sent you?" I said, "No." He goes, "Yeah, the range is closed." I said, "Well, I don't care for me," I said, "but I'll tell Fred and meet him at a you know, driving range, you know, public driving range." And he said, "No, leave it with me." And he arranged. And so nobody, here's how lucky we are. Nobody's on that range all day until mm-hmm. you showed up with your grandson.
No, it was fantastic.
No, it was very sweet. And Mike Marshall's a big Humble and Fred fan. And he made sure that we had golf balls. And it was just John hitting balls, so it wasn't going to hurt anything.
Does Mike Marshall ever marshal?
No, he does not.
Just wondering.
Oh, no. Oh, you're full of that kind of thing. All right, listen, we got a big show for you today. What's on the show, Howard? Aaron Solomon, the chief legal analyst for Esquire Digital, provides legal expert commentary, has provided on the Spears conservatorship battle for Yahoo News, BuzzFeed, and more. And he will maybe walk us through. I mean, both of us are fascinated. We were talking about it before the show. The idea that somebody could have their... I don't even know what a conservatorship was until I saw the Britney Spears documentary.
No, I'm the same way. Through this whole thing, I keep hearing about the story, watching the news, seeing the story, but I've never really taken the time to find out exactly what it's all about. Well, I sit there and go, geez, I wish I could understand what this is all about. And today we're having someone on the show that will explain it top to bottom. You know, Britney Spears, she's almost 40 years old now, isn't she? Like late 30s?
For sure.
Unbelievable.
No, she's closer to the Melanie's age. Yeah, for sure.
So how does someone control your life like that so long? That's the interesting part of it. It's like, how is this even a thing?
Well, you know? I agree. And even watching the documentary, Free Britney or whatever it was called, I still didn't understand. Like, and maybe he'll have this, the origin of all this. What was her mental state, or how mentally deficient are you? Like, for instance, could your family, my family, mm-hmm. more likely mine, you know, if they seem a decline in mental acuity, can they trigger a conservatorship? Anyway, this is all going to be fascinating, and it's going to happen in about 15 minutes. Okay, everyone.
And just a bit further to that, because I wonder, and not that there's anything wrong with it, but just timing. Britney has released a lot of short videos and photos lately of her being like naked in her backyard, like sort of provocative picture. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. She's free to do that. I just think that the timing of these things are just sort of weird, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's overthinking it, but... I mean, she's in great shape for 40.
Can you just direct me to these, just for research purposes?
Just Google it, Britney. Yeah.
I mean, maybe she's doing it now because she's able to.
Yeah.
Maybe she wasn't Britney Spears' latest photos. All right.
I mean, she covers her nipples with her arms and stuff like that, but like in her backyard and in the bathroom and stuff. And
she covers her nipples? Nippers?
Yeah, her nipsy wrists.
Oh yeah, there we go. Yeah, she's very you know, and good for her. Maybe this is
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe this is just her being able to finally, you know, feel freer. I don't know. I don't know, man.
But yeah, looking forward to that segment.
Yeah. You go ahead. I'm just looking at some.
You're lost in.
She's very healthy. She's a very healthy human being.
No, hey, she isn't that. She's a kid that sort of. She struggled with her weight a bit over the years, and like, who knows what she's been through.
Well, and that's sort of where we can start with Aaron, and just, you know, again, what mm-hmm. what has to happen in your life before your family or managers or parents, or I don't know, where somebody could trigger a conservatorship. Anyhow, all of this to come. I've got a bit of video I wanted to play for you. I know you wanted to talk about, there's two stories. McCartney seems to be a bit cranky. We'll get to mm-hmm. that in a second. And a LA, you said Raiders, but then you changed it to Las Vegas.
Yeah, Las Vegas Raiders.
Oh, okay. So the Las Vegas.
Las Vegas.
Right.
From Oakland.
Okay, yeah. So the Las Vegas Raiders head coach, there's a story about him. But first, I mentioned the world's most comfortable pants. What about, you know? Of course, I'm talking about the dungarees known as Dua. Dua.ca, the official sponsor of the Hummel and Fred 10th Anniversary Podcast, are presenting title sponsor Duer.ca. I'm wearing the relaxed denims quite a bit these days, performance denim slims. You can also get the relaxed, those are the ones I have. Fred's got the no sweat pants slims. They really are something
no
else.
Sweat, brother.
Say again.
No sweat, brother.
Yeah, man. Mm-hmm. There's t-shirts, there's joggers. There's adventure pants, Phil. Phil, you could be in a pair of adventure pants.
Yes, they're the bee's knees.
Yes, indeed. All the ships at sea. Duer.ca. Go check it out. The official presenting sponsor of Humble and Fred's 10th anniversary. The world's most comfortable pants. And if you use the promo code Humble and Fred 15 for 15% off your next order. Humble and Fred 15 at Duer.ca. The world's most comfortable pants and the presenting sponsor of the 10th anniversary. Fred.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Toronto Maple Leafs begin their 2021-22 season tonight by hosting the Montreal Canadiens. Oh, the memories. They're still stinging. And tonight, the Maple Leafs go into this game without Auston Matthews, who will not play the first three games of the season because, you know, he had that wrist surgery. Would this affect the odds, you would wonder? Go to bodog.eu/sports and see that the Toronto Maple Leafs are a puck and a half favorite over the Montreal Canadiens without Auston Matthews. And there's a chance maybe even Mitch Marner won't play. He got banged up in practice yesterday. The Habs would pay $150 to win. Okay, the over-under is 5.5. So that's the Leafs and Habs tonight. Leafs favored. You know, it's excruciating. What happened to them in the spring? They should have beat Montreal and they didn't. And then here we are, the first game of the season. They're favored to beat Montreal and the game really doesn't count, on and on and on. You know how we feel about our Maple Leafs. They're so aggravating. Whether you're a sports bettor, a horse racing fan, a poker, or a casino player, Bodog is your number one source of online gambling entertainment. From their industry-leading odds, world-class sportsbook, and feature-rich poker room to their fully loaded casino and racebook, they've been providing Canadian players with an unparalleled gaming experience since 1994. Sports in particular, single-game wagering, bodog.eu/sports. It's all there. Baseball, football, hockey, anything you want. All right, tonight, the Leafs and Habs. Not even excited.
Yeah, it's pretty sad for you. Oh yeah, they're the odds-on favorite to win when nothing matters.
In hey, it's October, eh? This is when we win the cup.
That's right. This is when
in October.
this is when the Leafs shine.
Oh yeah, they're world beaters.
That's right. The regular season is our season.
Although, you know what I did last night?
Oh.
Quickly, quickly, the NHL season started last night. The 10 o'clock game was the Seattle Kraken, the new team in Las Vegas. And I thought that's an interesting matchup. The two latest expansion teams, the first ever game for Seattle. So I stayed up and watched the first period. It was fascinating. You know, in Las Vegas.
I'm sorry, who's the other team? Las Vegas and Seattle?
Yeah. So, you know, any game in Vegas, it's just amazing. You know, the showmanship, the show they put on around the game. In Seattle's first hockey game, and I saw Seattle's first goal, they lost ultimately the Kraken 4-3 their first game. But it was interesting to watch a team play their very, very first game.
I saw our buddy Jeff Merrick had tweeted the name of somebody, and he said that name will forever be in hockey history. Excuse me.
Right.
Burpee. Will forever be in hockey history, and I'm assuming that must be the first goal scored in the Seattle franchise history.
Right.
By the way, not huge fan of the Kraken, but I guess it's a modern reference. It's a modern name, even though it's a medieval character.
Yeah, I don't get it, but
You know what? The same way that my reaction to the Raptors was like, "What? Right. The Raptors seems a bit gimmicky," and now it's like, "Yeah, the Raptors. That's cool."
Speaking of Merrick, I was listening to him yesterday on 590 The Fan. He does an afternoon show now, and the person he had on, I believe from Seattle, said the Kraken have outsold the Vegas Knights in first year sweaters, because when Vegas first came into the league, like, their merchandise was just crazy because of the colors and the novelty of it and Las Vegas. But the Kraken have outpaced that.
Well, I'm not surprised.
They have pretty neat sweaters, too.
Listen, I'm saying this like an old guy. You know, like, I remember when, you know, when the first wave of expansion hit the NHL and the California Golden Seals and their ridiculous uniforms and the Vancouver Canucks, but you eventually just get used to it, you know?
Little trivia here. When they first came into the league, they were the Oakland Seals.
Right.
Then they changed their name to the California Golden Seals.
And they were wearing white skates.
That's what I was going to ask you.
Of course, I remember that.
What was the significant part of their uniform was white
skates? It was white skates, man. And I don't know how your brain works, but I can remember that. You know, that seems weird. Why would I know they had white skates?
Because that was back in the day where you rarely saw those. The only time you saw those teams was when they were in Toronto or Montreal.
That's right.
That was it. Yeah. It wasn't like nowadays where you can watch any game at any time.
And not to get into, I want to get into McCartney and I want to get into this coach in a second, but
right.
Growing up, and this just for some perspective for Eastern Canadians, which I consider myself one now. I've spent half my life living here. I only spent 20 years in Saskatchewan. Mm-hmm. But part of the anti-Ontario Eastern bias comes from hockey. Because mm-hmm. all we ever saw were Toronto and Montreal games. And if you were a fan of any of the other teams, you know, mm-hmm. there was only four others, but eventually, you know, when there was 12, you never saw those teams. It was only Toronto playing those teams. And being a Boston fan was almost like, I don't know, it was sort of, it was more like, well, I love Bobby Orr, and it's not those two guys. You mm-hmm. know, it's not Toronto, Montreal. Anyway, let's talk. Do you want to talk McCartney first? Because I've got some McCartney. The McCartney won't take long. It's just that there's a story. Why don't you present this while we present a little Paul?
Well, there's an interview coming up in the BBC in the next few days. And Paul McCartney makes the declaration during this interview that, hey, once and for all, it was John that broke up the Beatles. It wasn't me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you heard those stories about, you know, it was really a business problem and Paul McCartney was more concerned about the business than John was. And for business reasons, Paul initiated the breakup. He says, no. Why he's waited this long, I don't know. But he said it was more John wanting to be a free spirit, wanting to do things on his own, wanting to break away from the other three and do his own thing. And he said that was the real reason the Beatles broke up. Which, you know, when a guy's dead, it's you hear those stories when a guy's dead or he can't sort of defend himself or reply. You think, geez, is this revisionist history for McCartney? He has the ability to do that. And then we hear that. Pardon me?
I was going to say, yeah, but it's, you know, he was one of the four guys. You'd think he'd know the truth.
Why has he waited this long, though?
I don't know that he has, because, well, I'm sorry, what were you going to say? Because it didn't seem like brand new news to me. I thought we always knew that John was sort of the one that triggered this.
Well, if anyone had asked me before that interview, I would have said it was something to do with Apple Music and the business, and McCartney was such a businessman, and he was getting influence from the Eastmans, and that's where it all... That's the answer I would have given. But, I mean, this is a... It seems to be a big story, this declaration that he's made. And, again, what comes to my mind is, like, why now? Maybe he wants to get it off his chest while he's still alive and has all his marbles.
I can't remember if it was a Stern interview. It must have been this summer when he was just doing interviews. And it was McCartney talking about there was a moment where Ringo came to Paul McCartney's house.
Yeah.
And was trying to get them back together before it... You know, they separated permanently, and I guess McCartney was in no mood to talk to Ringo. But Ringo had been sent over to try and smooth things out. Before we leave McCartney, though, he said he's been, like, just shit-talking the Rolling Stones now. Yeah, and
now something's coming out of New Yorker magazine where he refers to the Stones as a blues cover band. He said, don't get me wrong, I like the Stones. They're a great band and everything. But he said, you know, their scope wasn't as wide as ours. They just tend to lean on the blues, and they're like a blues cover band. Now, you know, when he, back that Stern interview a summer or so ago, whenever it was, when he said the Beatles were better than the Stones, what else is he going to say? And there was a couple of little attachments to that. Mick Jagger's response was, you know, Paul's a sweet guy. Like, I love the Beatles. That was his response. It'll be interesting to see what the response to this one might be. By the way, you know, Jagger was on with Stern.
You know, I haven't heard it. They did a rare Wednesday afternoon show to accommodate Jagger.
Yeah, it was only like a 40-minute interview, and it didn't get that deep.
Yeah.
But now that this has been released, and I guess talking to Stern, he didn't know at the time that McCartney had referred to them as a blues cover band. But we'll wait for the reaction to that.
You know, I like a lot of Rolling Stones songs, and I would say this, fight me if you want, but I don't think there's, you know, one Rolling Stones song to me that is as good as, like, I would say, let me put it this way, the best Rolling Stones song is not as good as the best Beatles song, and the Beatles have about 10 of those. You know, there's lots of Stones songs I like.
Yeah, it's a taste thing. I've met many Stones fans over the years that just laugh off the Beatles. Like, it's like, what? Are you kidding?
No, I know.
No.
Yeah. You know, I would say before we get to the coach here, the best thing about the Rolling Stones is how long they've been doing it. And that's something they have over the Beatles, and that no one is ever going, nobody, you want to talk about the GOAT, no one is ever going to equal what the Rolling Stones have done. Over the course of nearly 60 years or 55 years. Like, that's the most remarkable thing about them to me.
Well, that was part of Jagger's response when told that McCartney had said the Beatles are better than the Stones. He said it's a hard comparison to make. He said, because before arena and stadium shows became really big, the Beatles had broken up. He said, our legacy is showmanship and big stadiums and big arenas and the
world's
fabulous sound systems. And he said the Beatles never, ever had that.
Yeah, when the Beatles played Shea Stadium, you could barely hear them. Kind of like my microphone now. Laughing. The Rolling Stones, deservedly so, the world's greatest rock and roll band, will never be equaled, you know? Let's talk, while I change mics again... Let's talk about the coach of the Las Vegas Raiders.
Yeah, John Gruden, Howard, coached the Oakland Raiders years ago, then went to Tampa Bay Buccaneers, won a Super Bowl. Then he became, I think for ESPN, a football analyst. Over the years, has made a lot of money. But at the Oakland, you know, he could never shake the Oakland thing, and then was lured back to coach them in 2018 for a 10-year contract worth $100 million. This is to coach John Gruden.
That's how much? That's $10 million a year.
Yes, to coach.
Wow.
The Raiders, the Davis family, Al Davis died. His son wanted Gruden back, and he said, you know, I got this broadcasting career thing going on. It'll take a lot of money. They paid him $10 million over, or $10 million a year over 10 years. Like, just stunning. But there was some whispers last week that Gruden had taken a shot at the president of the Players Association, a racial shot. And it was a story sort of in the background. I mean, it didn't sound good. And then he came out and apologized and said, I should never have said that. It was inappropriate. And then, you know, nowadays people dig deeper. And over the weekend, they came up with all these emails, this correspondence, misogyny, racism, homophobic, like
all the hits.
All the hits, Howard. And, you know, blatant stuff like when I think it was the Rams drafted the first gay player. He took a shot at that and misogyny, like about some of the broadcasters, things that he had actually written down.
When they were written down in correspondence. How would somebody have gotten a hold of that?
I don't know. Apparently he was tied. There was an investigation into a member of the Washington Football Club. They had all sorts of problems. It was a poison work environment. Anyway, apparently there was correspondence from Gruden to the guy that owned that team. And you know what it's like nowadays. It doesn't take much. Anyway, wow. They uncovered all this stuff. So bad that he didn't even push back at all. He resigned on, what, Sunday night or Monday night. So he walks away from a $100 million contract.
How many years had he been into that contract?
I think he was in year four. But
he walked away from $70 million?
Well, and here's the thing. He walked away from it. Obviously, he would have had to, because they would have had to have fired him.
Right.
And part of me wants to say, you know, in 2021, they would have had to fire. I mean, anybody in any year should be fired for what has been exposed. So blatant that he hasn't even pushed back. He's just walked away and he says, I love the Raiders too much. I don't want to make them the focus of this.
Right.
I resign. But you look, you know, and he was a great analyst, too, on ESPN. He did Monday Night Football.
So he won't have that gig anymore. But you said he's made enough money in his career that it's not like he walked away and will be devastated in terms of financially.
I hope he saved his money, invested well, because he's not going to be around football again. And already the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who had him up on the Ring of Honor at the stadium, have taken his name down that quickly, like the Blue Jays did with Roberto Alomar.
Isn't that something?
So you'll never hear from John Gruden again.
Do you think that we're on the Ring of Honor at Chorus?
Yeah. I think we are, actually.
No, we're not. Do they have a Ring of Honor? Oh, hang on a second. Sorry, I turned you down. And by the way, just for everyone keeping track of all the troubles this week, for some reason now, since we got on Facebook, you have become... You know your Zoom feed. Have you noticed it, Phil? That Fred is his feed's starting to warble a little bit and stutter a bit.
There was a frozen static moment.
Yeah, but no, there's been several. I don't know if you've noticed, and I don't want to make a big deal of it, guys. I'm just keeping track of the stuff that guys we go. On this note of your coach story, and I know other people are well into this series. I just started it last night. The morning show. I know you guys talked about it. You're completely up to date on this program, right, Freddie?
I watched the first season and then tried to watch the first episode of the second season and fell asleep. It didn't do much for me, but I'll give it another shot.
Well, I bring it up because I'm on episodes 1 and 2 last night, and Rachel had watched it, and somewhere last year, I was at her house, and, you know, we were looking for something to watch. I said, well, put this on, and it was well into the season, and so I'm really... You know, I've only ever seen an episode. I really didn't have any context. But two things stood out for me, Phil. One is Jennifer Aniston is very good. And whatever age she's at now, she's a very attractive and very... She's very good as an actress. Aaron Solomon's about to get on here. The second thing is that storyline that I'm just introduced to which is Steve Carell's character being accused of sexual impropriety.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that as the episode ended last night, his character has decided to fight back as opposed to sort of going, you know, as he says, there's two responses to these things. You can sort of apologize, contrition. You can go that route, or you can fight back because he feels he's been wrongly accused.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know how it develops in the series, and you people that are already finished this series are saying, well, Howard, this is what happens. But I just thought it was an interesting choice. And it sucked me in. I was like, oh, that's cool. He's not just going to apologize. He's going to stand up and say, "I, this was all consensual." And it kind of reminded me a little bit, just a tiny little bit, about Aziz Ansari, who was one of those Me Too characters who got caught up in something that ultimately turned out to not be what he was being accused of. And I just thought that was an interesting choice to make in a series in this 2021s.
Listen, you know, that can be a weapon nowadays. You talk about unstable people. You know, an unstable person can use that those accusations as a weapon. And I mean, it would be naive to think that there's not people out there that have been falsely accused as a weapon. So it's a tough one.
Absolutely.
I mean, where we are nowadays, it's just you're supposed to just go along and believe, and you know, and probably the vast majority of the cases that's true. But like in anything else in life, there's always two sides to a story.
All right, guys and gals, let's gather around the old radio now as we move on to the Gig Sky guest of the day. It's the Gig Sky Humble and Fred Hour. And our guest today, I was told in advance that we may not have video access, although we've asked Aaron. But his strong preference, according to our producer, is to keep his video off, and that's fine. Aaron, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Fantastic, my
excellent
friend. Aaron Solomon is an expert legal commentator and chief analyst for Esquire Digital. He's also the Gig Sky guest of the day, and after we finish with Aaron, we'll tell you how you can get money off your data plan while traveling. Aaron, let's just get right to it. Freddie and I talked quite a little bit before you came on the show about this conservatorship. And I said to Fred, you know, I watched the Britney Spears documentary and I came away a bit confused. And maybe you can start by giving us some context. Describe what a conservatorship is. And then for us older people, how do we make sure that our family just doesn't, you know, trigger one and take all our riches?
Oh, you're in big trouble. Your family's totally going to trigger one. That's inevitable. So this is what a conservatorship is legally. And it's kind of an abstract thing. Really what happens is the conservator ends up becoming the legal person of the conservatee when it comes to things like making decisions, including making financial decisions as well. So in California, where Britney Spears' conservatorship is, the California Probate Code lists everything about a conservatorship. And she had one set up now for close to 14 years. And as we know, it really wasn't a great conservatorship. Her father has been the conservator, and he's alleged to have made some pretty disastrous decisions about her personal life, her health, and her finances.
So 13, 14 years ago, she was in her mid-20s. Where did it come from? Why did it happen?
Yeah, what's triggered it?
Yeah.
There was a lot of concern around starting in 2007. And I watched probably both documentaries that you did, the Times documentary and the Netflix one. There was a lot of concern about her mental and emotional state. But, you know, there's a lot of concern about a lot of people's mental and emotional state, including celebrities. This never should have rise to the level of conservatorship under California law, because basically the test as to whether somebody should be a conservatee are things like, you know, can they take care of themselves? Can they take care of their finances? Can they do basic things in their lives? And as we saw, you know, Britney Spears was not only able to do basic things in her life after the conservatorship, she was able to go do multi-million dollar tours.
Just quickly before you continue, I got a follow-up question about Britney. But when my father, and I think the same for Fred, when my parent got older, we were given, what was it called? Jeez, I had it.
Power of attorney.
Power of attorney. Yeah.
Now, yeah, power of attorney. How is how is that different than a conservatorship?
So a couple of things. Often power of attorney can be given in a temporary situation. So, for example, somebody's going under surgery or somebody's temporarily unable to do something. You can give somebody power of attorney basically over your finances, over whatever. A conservatorship goes against the will of the conservatee.
Okay.
It's basically people going into court and saying this person is unable to, you know, take care of their affairs and take care of themselves. And that's what Jamie Spears did with Britney. And you know, it's not something that never happens for a family member to become the conservator. It does happen. So that in itself wasn't exceptional. How Jamie treated her was really exceptional.
Well, that's it. At the time, people could have looked upon it as there's a concerned father that doesn't want her daughter to blow a fortune. So he has stepped in to, you know, to do what's right for her. It's the ensuing story that turns sour.
Exactly. And the fortune was, well, not luckily, not the entire fortune. And also luckily for Britney, and that's part of what has put this back in the public spotlight, is that, you know, she can go out and earn a lot of money for the rest of her career now. It's not like, you know, her earning power is over. Imagine if Britney were to do a Free Britney tour in the year after, you know, she was no longer in the conservatorship. This could be a $1 billion tour.
Well, I want to get back to, so in year one of when this happened, was there nothing Britney Spears could do to talk to her father and say, you know, this isn't fair, or I wish you wouldn't do this? Or didn't she have her own like management team? Or I honestly don't know the answer, Aaron. Was her father her manager at the time and part of the team that worked with her?
I don't think at the time her father was her manager, but once the conservatorship came into place, everybody had to answer to the conservator.
Okay.
And that included, for example, you know, the court-appointed lawyer. Only this summer was Britney allowed to get her own lawyer. You know, the details of what a conservatee is allowed to do is very, very restrictive. So the court-appointed lawyer, who, by the way, you know, Sam Ingham, made over $5 million being Britney's court-appointed lawyer. The court-appointed lawyer has to report to the estate. The estate is the conservator. Conservator is Jamie Spears. There's a lot of structural things in a conservatorship that make it very easy for things to happen, as they did with Britney Spears. Ironically, because Britney Spears has always been so much in the public spotlight, you would think that it would be more difficult for her to have her money and her freedom taken,
yeah.
But it turned out to be easier.
So maybe I miss it. Run it by me again. What was her behavior that initiated this? I can't remember back then. Was it that reckless?
It was, you know, people said that it was reckless, imbalanced, that there was fear that she would hurt herself. This is also, I remember a couple things that stand out, right? One is that there were this photographer followed her into her gas station bathroom, and Britney was walking around the bathroom with no shoes on.
Yeah.
And then very much around the same time,
right. She shaved her head.
Yeah, and she was speeding with her kid in her lap. In the driver's seat, and
okay,
she said,
it's coming,
you know,
back.
She said, Aaron, like, I'm from the South. This is how we learned how to drive.
You know, Aaron, interestingly enough, that behavior in 2007 versus the behavior of the president we just got through would be like, where's his fucking conservatorship, Aaron? Anyway, sorry.
I'm gonna pass on that.
I digress.
Especially because we may be seeing a lot more of him soon.
Yeah, no kidding. So this was established and went on for years. While it was going on, was she just given an allowance? And if you can, like you said, she was still performing, but she didn't have access to her own finances.
Correct. So she was given an allowance for some things, and obviously the estate paid for some things that she needed. But, you know, from what we saw in the documentaries, and again, I'm not someone who believes that everything we see in a documentary is real. And I've also counseled people over the past few weeks that judges in, you know, district courts don't watch documentaries and consider that to be evidence. Nonetheless, the things we saw in the documentaries was, you know, like it was a really great invasion of her privacy. It was also a great invasion of her professional space and her decision-making ability. And this was all part of the structure that Jamie Spears set up as conservator, including all the things like the security agencies.
Was there any relationships tied to this? Because, again, children, and then I know she was married and in relationships. Was that person, those guys, were they affected by this? They couldn't access the money as well? And or did her old man think that they were a bad influence on her? Was there any of that going on?
It was definitely the latter. In fact,
yeah.
You know, it's funny because some of these relationships were painted from day one in the public and media spotlight as being bad for Britney. And these two documentaries that released 2 weeks ago, we actually saw that some of these relationships were trying to help Britney. And they got to the point where, you know, the conservator, Jeremy Spears, said this relationship is going to be over to these men. And they mm-hmm. really felt that they had no choice.
Well, wasn't the famous one, I mean, when she was married to Kevin Federline, I believe that was his name. Isn't that his name, Phil?
Something like that.
Federline. Yep. Mm-hmm. And he was kind of it was a weird moment in time. Anyway, let's get to this. So we watched the documentaries, and it turned, and then Jamie Spears, her father's in charge. What are the things that, again, triggered the move to end the conservatorship? And maybe you can help explain, it's not completely over. It's just been suspended.
Let me do that piece first. So that's a strategic decision from Britney's lawyer, Matthew Rosengart. And he's an excellent lawyer who's done a lot of conservatorships and has represented celebrities. The reason he did not ask Judge Brenda Penny to end the conservatorship a couple of weeks ago is because he wants a temporary conservator until the next hearing, which is on November 12th, so they can really dig deep into the wrongdoing that Jamie did. And part of that is Jamie is now responsible for turning over key conservatorship documents to the temporary conservator, who is an accountant. Another very important thing that came out of this, by the way, is there's a brand new California law signed into effect last week by Governor Gavin Newsom that makes it much, much more difficult for people like Jamie Spears to do the kinds of things that that he was doing.
Okay.
So again, that's kind of a roundabout answer to your question, but I think that there's going to be a lot of good that actually comes out for other families and other people who've had to endure a conservatorship because of what Britney endured.
And that's what this is all about, right? I mean, as you've explained, in situations, this can make sense and be a good thing. This was an abuse of a conservatorship. And can he be held liable for anything? Like, how much dough is involved here? How much money did he get out of this? Would he have to return it? Would there be any implications that way?
And could he be could he also be criminally charged?
Yeah.
Yes, I was just going to say that. He can be criminally charged and he can be held. I believe there's going to be another Spears versus Spears lawsuit. I think Britney will sue Jamie in civil court. And Jamie, being kind of a little bit snake-like, I'm sure that he's already made himself judgment-proof, meaning that even if Britney were to win, she's not going to end up collecting any money from him. And by the way, one thing that you said about, you know, not every conservatorship being like this. Joni Mitchell, for example, had a temporary conservatorship. You know, she had some surgery. She had some problems. She asked for a conservatorship to be put into place, and then it was no longer in place. It doesn't always have to be a terrible thing. Historically, it's right. For things like dementia that don't get better. But with celebrity mm-hmm. conservatorships, there have been far too many bad ones, not just Britney.
So to your point about Britney, the strategy being a temporary conservatorship with a third party on the way to a full, you know, I don't know what you call it, when you have it lifted. Is this something that's going to happen imminently once the next round of legalese is done?
I believe so. So the temporary conservatorship just last week has been put into effect to last until mid-December. I don't think it's going to need to go that long. I think that on November 12th, the conservatorship is going to be ended. And part of what really drove this was part of your question before, is like, why are we looking at this now? Why is this in the public spotlight now? And why is Britney in court? Is honestly because of the Free Britney movement. Between, you know, her fans all over the world, it really built up quite ahead of steam.
Amazing.
And put itself in the public spotlight. So that really is a service that they did.
Do her and her father have any relationship?
Not a good one. None at all.
No, okay, I mean, like,
my understanding.
In this 13...
They're going to be litigants.
Well, no, for sure. But in the 13 years, at some point, whether it was early or in the middle, she must have... this movement or this idea of being getting out from under this... You know, things can't have been very pleasant at Passover. That's all I'm saying.
I think that's very well said. You know, Pesach was not a very good time.
No, she was like, Daddy, why is this night different than all other nights?
And she probably was also asking why there was pork on the table, but that's another story.
Aaron, let me ask you this, and I'll preface it because anyway, as a legal person. And there's nothing wrong with the human body, and there's nothing wrong with pictures of women naked. If you were her advisor, what would you have said to her about releasing recent pictures of, you know, being naked in the backyard? And and again, there's nothing wrong with that, but just the timing thing, would you have said, maybe, Brittany, you wouldn't want to do that now?
It's a fantastic question, and I'm going to preface that by saying that every piece of legal advice I would have given her over the past 6 months has already proven to be wrong. For example, I would have told her, don't make that initial statement in court. You know, don't be seen as the one trying to rally all these fans, because that's not necessarily what the court wants to see or hear. Mm-hmm. On that note, yeah, I would have said, don't put the pictures that you put on Instagram. But like I said, everything that she's been doing over the past, you know, 12 to 20 weeks has worked excessively well. So if that's what she wants to keep doing, go ahead.
Yeah.
I mean, the reality is, like I said before, she's setting herself up at the end for a massive payday when she does this eventual tour, hopefully being able to make good decisions by herself and not blowing all that new money.
And I think what Fred and I were sort of getting at, and again, I don't care what she does, but, you know, as this is all unfolding, maybe you want to keep the sort of more provocative side of your personality down. But as you also said, Aaron, you know, judges aren't watching documentaries. You know, Judge Perry isn't making her decision, or Judge Penny isn't making a decision based on Britney Spears' Instagram. You know what I mean? It's based on, you know, facts and in legalese versus, you know, what she's doing on the side. I mean, 13 years is long enough for a woman to prove, or a young person to prove, that she's able to handle her day-to-day business. But I think the real takeaway from all this legal stuff is that her father's, you know, he's a snake, and he basically did it maybe initially to, you know, smooth things over for her, but he's made a lot of money off her.
And he's made a lot of money.
He's stolen
off her,
a lot of her money.
Yep, exactly. And one of the interesting things that we are seeing now from the documentaries is, as I said before, documentaries are not in themselves evidence. But we've seen even in the last hearing that some of the allegations from the documentaries are now brought in as evidentiary support for Britney's case. And we're going to see a lot more of that. You're going to see a lot more things from the documentary be actually brought in as evidence in November.
All right. Listen, Aaron Solomon. Yeah, man. What a terrific appearance. We certainly appreciate it. Aaron's the chief legal analyst for Esquire Digital. You can also read him in Yahoo News, BuzzFeed, and so much more. And Aaron, I hope this won't be the last time you hang out with us, because it was fascinating. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, guys.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, my Aaron. Friend. Take care. There's Aaron Solomon, our Gigs Guy guest of the day, everybody. The Gigs Guy guest of the day. Latest service offers including mobile data while flying. I find this fascinating. You can be on, Phil, did you know that you could be on an aeroplane and use mobile data?
That's right, on airlines like Malaysia Airlines and EVA.
Oh, aren't
with
you?
With the Gig Sky service, yeah.
Aren't you just a wealth of knowledge? Go to gigsky.com/aeromobile and see the list of partner airlines. Phil's got a couple for you there. Download the Gig Sky app today and enter the code HF2021 for $5 off your first plan. Or gigsky.com for more info. It's available in 190 countries, man. You can get it for Android or iOS and get the affordable data coverage that you deserve. Gigsky.com, promo code is HF2021 for $5 off your next plan.
Hey, let's talk about the Chambers plan. How about that?
Yeah, do it.
Canada's number one group benefits plan for small business. Chambers Plan is Canada's leading group benefit plan for one to, say, 100 employees. Go to chamberplan.ca, get a free quote. Group insurance and employee benefits enjoyed by 30,000 Canadian businesses. They've been around for 40 years. Hear that? 40 years. It's fantastic. Very simple to sign up. As I said, go to chamberplan.ca. It's stable. Again, come on. They've been around for 40 years. Smart thing to do for your employees, because when you walk in that door and say, listen, your prescriptions are now covered, your dental is covered, some therapies are covered, travel insurance, they'll love you. They'll love you. That's why it's the smart thing to do. Chamberplan.ca.
I can tell you, I had a massage recently. I recently had a massage. And, the Chamber Plan covers that type of thing, physiotherapy, massage therapy, all kinds of modalities. And I can't tell you, it's been a while since I've done it, where, and just using the app to input my receipt. What am I trying to say? You know what I mean? Like, get your, you know, you put it in.
Yes. All done online.
And done on my phone. And I just took a picture of the receipt and I uploaded the thing, and it couldn't have been easier. And I mean, a lot of older people aren't as comfortable doing that. You know, we come from a society of paper and mail. But I can tell you, that's one of the other advantages of the Chamber Plan that I have found. And it's very seamless and easy to do. I thought we would just go ahead.
One more thing on the Britney Spears thing. A couple of times I was going to say, yeah, and the kid is really talented. But, you know, over the years, I wondered what Britney Spears was. Was she one of those manufactured kid stars? Because there's some isolated vocals out there that are pretty scary of her on. And not that you have to play them or anything. It's like, what it, is she raw talent, or was she one of those manufactured kid talent things that?
Well, you know where she comes from, don't you?
Not that it matters.
You know, she was on the she's on the Mickey Mouse Club. I mean, she was a child star in the making from, you know, childhood. As far as, you know, how talented or not she is, you know, anyone that can get up in front of all those people and dance around and all that coordination and still sort of gasp through some songs.
No, I know.
You know?
And you're right. It's the, like, because you watch, like, Janet Jackson. It's absolutely amazing. How do you, well, Mick Jagger, we talked about him earlier. How do you move like that and still sing?
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if there's some backing vocals that Jagger sings along with during some of those more difficult, you know, songs. I don't know, but, you know, why wouldn't there be?
Britney's a great dancer, and Britney Spears, great dancer, great stage show, and the whole thing. But he's right, Aaron's right. When she comes back after all this, it's going to be a smash hit, and cha-ching, cha-ching.
You mentioned Janet Jackson, and I think, didn't she have a song, Rhythm Nation or something,
We are a part of the Rhythm Nation.
Yep.
I'm sorry. Please, I can't hear you. Give me some more of that song.
I don't remember anything else.
All right. The reason I bring it up is because, you know, I don't know, the way my brain works, this is different, I guess, because I was trying to remember how to spell rhythm yesterday. And I had to go in. I was writing it in a note. And you're good at this. Can you spell it for me? Because I couldn't spell it. I had to look it up.
R-Y-T-H-M?
Yeah. Like
R-H-Y-T-H-M.
R-Y-T-H-M.
Say it again.
R-H-Y-T-H-M.
So I even wrote that part down wrong.
Oh.
R-H.
It's R-H?
Y.
Didn't. Okay.
T-H-M.
Okay.
Yeah, it's R-H-Y-T-H-M, and no part of that makes any sense to me. And it was one of those moments yesterday. I'm going to tell you about another one in a second. Kind of a senior moment where I was like, try as I may, I couldn't get enough of the words of the word right to get it to start to populate in the Phil, you wouldn't believe what I was. Rhythm, because there's one half a vowel in that whole word.
Mm-hmm.
The why. Sometimes the why is in that word. Not a real vowel, the sometimes vowel. They constructed the word rhythm with no vowels, no mainstream vowels. Alternative vowel, but yeah. No, but think about it. The mainstream vowels are missing from that, completely missing from
y
that word.
Why is extreme?
Why is an alternate vowel? Why is a, say.
Why is a defense
sometimes? Why is a non-binary vowel, Phil?
Well, yeah. It, as, you know, that little thing, E-I-O-U, yeah. Sometimes why.
Yeah, it's the sometimes why. Rhythm is made up completely of consonants and a sometimes vowel. I find that outrageous, Phil. Well, this is a true story.
Those assholes thinking.
No, seriously, it's a, you know, I mean, our, no, it's ridiculous. Anyway, here's a real seniors moment. So I left the house yesterday before coming to see you and baby John. I changed into my, I was wearing some old shorts, and then I changed into some golf shorts, and I left my wallet and a pack of gum in my upstairs bathroom, and I went to the golf course, and at some point I was thinking what I was going to maybe pick up on the way home. I was going to get a few groceries, and I'm like, oh shit, I don't have my wallet. So I didn't. Anyway, I came home, and I, you know, had the evening. I watched a little bit of the, I rewatched the first half of the Chappelle, the special on Netflix, just because we'd been talking about it, and I wanted to just watch it again. Then I watched two episodes of the morning show. And then I go to bed, and I'm brushing my teeth. It's about 10 o'clock, and I, you know, I'm getting my heating pad all ready. You know, I have a heating pad. It warms up, you know.
Jesus Christ. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I got my heating.
Sleeping pill.
No, I took my bedtime gummy. So I took my bedtime gummy, and I warmed up my heating pad, and had my I actually had my headphones on, listening to Smartless, and I had my phone in my back pocket. I'm all ready. I'm brushing my teeth. And then I'm like, oh, shit, I'm where's my wallet? This is a true story. I'm in my underwear. I go all the way downstairs, get my keys. I thought, oh, maybe I left it in my car. Sometimes I do that. I leave it in the side pocket there. I go in my car, and I'm like, shit, it's not there. I'm like, oh, maybe I left it on the counter in the kitchen. It's not there. Then I go back upstairs, and I'm like, oh, fuck, I don't know. Did I leave it at the golf? I start doing this. Then I open the lights in the bathroom where I just was, and it's sitting there on the counter.
Yeah.
Where I was just brushing my teeth with my headphones on. And I sort of looked at it, and I went, wow, man. So that's where we're at. Going to be 62 in 3 months, and this is where I'm at.
Hey. We can all relate to that. You know how many times I've been on my phone and thought, hey, where's my phone? I'm telling you, I've done that. Yeah.
Well, how many times have you done this? I put my reading glasses, which is what I wear, which you wear. I usually have it on my shirt, and I've been looking for my reading glasses while it was sitting here.
Another thing, more and more now, as I get older, I think about what I'm going to eat based on how it's going to make me feel, when I didn't used to think that.
100%.
Like a lot of things now, I look at it and I go, I really want that, but how's it going to make me feel? Because I don't know, my just system can't take what it used to, or whatever that is, whether it's spice. Like the other day, Danny brought these nice bagels home, and I had some cream cheese on them. And I know now, before I eat cream cheese again, I'll look at it and go, do I really want to feel the way this cream cheese
makes me feel? Well, how does cream cheese make you feel?
Just made me feel, I don't know. Yeah. I'm a little bit lactose intolerant. Now, I don't know if that comes into play there, but just a feeling I get from stuff like that. And it's like, I don't, anyway, there's a lot of stuff like that.
I'll tell you that I have a similar thing. Oh, they're Dan's here. Sorry. I didn't see him. I have a similar thing now with onion.
Yeah. Stuff like that.
Like, I made Brussels sprouts. I told you I made these really nice, you know, amazing, you know, nice fried Brussels sprouts with pancetta the other night. And the recipe calls for diced onion. And I didn't make it with diced onion. Rachel's not big on the onions. And it makes me feel weird. You know, makes I don't get indigestion. It just does something to my system now. Anyway.
Yeah, I'm like that. I'm like that with ice cream. I'm like, onions is a good one with me. They really, really have to be soft and sautéed, or they stay with me, and I sit there and go, why did I eat that? Again, there's several, you know, certain kinds of meat, like beef now, just plays havoc in my gut.
Yeah.
It's got to be an age thing.
Hey, Dan. Yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't realize you were waiting there. I have a story here before your news, and I hope this isn't part of... Is the Shatner thing part of your news?
No, it's not. I did the Shatner space thing yesterday.
Yeah. Well, okay, so he's going up in space today, and if you go online...
Yeah, what time?
In less than an hour.
Amazing.
Oh.
So, as I said to you yesterday, there's my first impression of the picture of the astronauts going up with Shatner was that Shatner had the, what am I fucking doing here, look in his face. But if you're a Star Trek fan, now the whole internet is filled with memes basically saying, because is the only person in the shot that anyone knows is Shatner. And if you're a Star Trek fan, you know this. If you don't recognize the character before the commercial, that character is going to die. All the social media memes you see now are all these three people are like, we're not going to make it. We are. Based on history, we're not going to make it. Anyway, so they'll be going up, and I guess they're only going up for a bit.
Yeah, it's like 12 or 13 minutes. Well, along that. And
Dan's all frozen there, too.
The name. There's a line. There's something line. You cross it over, yeah.
He's only going up 66 miles or something like that. Yeah.
All right. Listen, Tim Niblett is standing by, so let's get right to the news. Now that everyone is frozen and warbling, here we go.
The Eggerman comes, as for credentials, he has none. Can't tell a headline from his bum, but his voice is nice and low. Dan Duran, the Eggerman's here. He's prone to falling off his chair, but he's got a big wang, so he don't care, and his voice is nice and low.
My voice is nice and low.
And now live from the trailer at the trailer place.
Where trailers live.
Humble and Fred are proud to present the Dan Duran News. Now here's Anchorman Dan Duran.
Today is National No Bra Day. To celebrate, release the boobs. Let them be free. Like moths to a flame.
Wait. You know when...
What?
It's funny... When I was younger, and you would catch just a little indication of a nipple. Remember how exciting that used to be?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, and even now,
high school in this.
Go ahead. Yeah.
No, you go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, even now,
you broke up there.
Yeah, even now, if I come across an inadvertent nipple sighting, I find it quite. I'm always like, oh, lucky, there's a nipple.
I think we're programmed for that.
You know, almost 50 years ago in the 70s in high school in Scarborough, none of the girls wore bras. Like, it was just so common to see them in their little tops and their nipples piercing through their blouses and their little tops. And it was crazy. And I don't think they allow, some 50 years later, I don't think they allow that now in the high schools.
I remember when you used know. To shoot your little Tic Tacs through a T-shirt, man. You were quite something.
You know. My mother was not huge, but my mother had larger breasts, and she used to call her bra her over-shoulder boulder holder.
Yeah.
And that wasn't her line, but it used to be funny to hear her say that. Time for my over-shoulder boulder holder.
I don't think Luba...
That's about 70 years old, that joke. Anyway.
Yeah, but you made it fresh.
You brought it back.
You brought it back. You made it fresh.
You're a little spin on it. Yeah,
Luba never. I don't think Luba had. My mother had, larger breasts. I do remember being somewhat curious about the bras that your mums used to hang over the shower rod.
Right.
Yeah. I'm like, what's going on with those?
Some look like missile cones.
That's right. Dan Duran, let's get to your top story.
I had breast reduction surgery, as everyone knows.
Yeah.
The funny part of that is it runs in our family, but mostly with females. Like, several females on my mom's side of the family had breast reduction surgery.
Wow.
And then somehow I got pulled into that group.
Along came Freddie.
Well, go for coffee.
You know, it's weird because I've only been in a few situations where I've seen this, but it seems to me that you've had cock reduction surgery too. So,
I'll go with that.
Yeah. Dan, I can't remember. Have you done a story? Is it over? Is it time for Niblet? What are you doing?
Tim's waiting, but okay, here we go. Like moths to a flame, or a trailer porch light. Brown crabs find underwater power cables difficult to resist.
Uh-oh.
It's a new study, according to... It's an unintended side effect of setting up renewable energy in ocean waters. It's been attracting crabs to the cables, and they just hang out there due to electromagnetism. It's kind of the strength of 500 microteslas, which is about 5% the strength of a fridge door magnet. The crabs seem to be attracted to it, and they just sit still. Problem is not just that, but that in itself is not a problem, but they're not moving, then they're not foraging or seeking a mate. It's like crab crack. And it could affect the valuable crab industry. And there's ways around this, but it's not easy. They could bury the cable, but then they're disturbing the ocean floor, and how that would affect, you know, all this, you know, greening of the world and making it a better place to live has little hiccups along the way.
You know, Dan,
they're not destroying the cables, though, are they?
No, they're just hanging out on the cables.
Dan, we're just all trying to do our best, you know. Look, I'm back in the 1940s. Dan Duran, will you favor us with
one? There you are.
There I am. Back in the 1940s, you're frozen.
Wait.
You're frozen. He's warbling. You're frozen. He's warbling. And the only one who's had a clean connection is Fizzbum.
A crab ate your mic cable, Howard.
I'm serious. The only mic that works consistently, no warbling, no latency, is Phil. And he's talking into a fucking recorder.
I don't know what to say.
Well, I'm tired of it myself.
I'll tell you what I'm ready to do. I'm ready to just junk this and use Boone's board. Do you have any more? Because Tim Niblett, who is the retirement Sherpa, is standing by, and... you know, he doesn't need to be part. Oh, hang on a second. What's that, Daniel? Now you're gone completely. I'm not hearing anyone's audio now. Guys? Oh, wait a minute.
It's his name.
Oh, there we go. Yes, yeah, sorry.
Because I hear Dan.
No. I clicked off the on-air button. Yeah, so I'll just add that to the aggravation.
Okay, yeah. All right. Well, anyway, enjoy your day.
Daniel.
I look forward to tomorrow. I'm going to be seeing you tomorrow.
I can't wait, my friend. I haven't seen you for a while since you've been out in the world. I miss you.
And we got something to talk about. We got this whole tech thing to work.
Oh, you know how I love that.
You know, it's like two guys getting together to work something out. You know, we got an actual thing to do rather than just, you know, hanging. We got a job.
Yes, we do. So. All right. And do me a favor. Don't forget to bring your microphone.
I'll bring my microphone. I'll bring my computers.
Because I'd also like to try that as an experiment. I'd like to see if we did a complete mic change, a complete swap of the microphones. Would that have any effect on this?
Yeah. We'll work that out then.
Okay. Dan Duran's news today brought to you by Dan Duran Industries.
Yeah.
And
all of them, yes. Yeah.
All Dan Duran. If you need Dan Duran,
here for you.
Yeah, he'll come over to your place. Just for a fee?
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
If you're having a dinner party and you just want an interesting guest.
Yeah, for
sure. Dan Duran is very reasonable. $175 an hour plus food is what Dan charges.
Yeah. All right. And Tim loves that. Tim Liblett loves my approach to making money and... you know, and then socking it away.
Yeah,
so let's hear from Tim now.
Well, listen, the thing is, I'll tell you what, you should have, it's too bad you didn't meet Tim Niblett 10 years ago.
Yeah, too bad, yeah.
Seriously.
Some better advice.
You'd have some
great
advice.
All right, I must go now.
All right.
All right.
All right, my friend. Thank you, Dan. Phil, don't let me finish this broadcast without talking about the health gauge, okay? Let's check on
there
that.
There he is.
There's our friend. Let's see if that mic works before we introduce him.
Good morning.
There it is.
One, two, three.
There it is. A very good friend of ours, Freddie and I and Baby John were just at that facility that's in your background not hours ago. Spent the afternoon at Glenn.
I heard. Exciting times. It reminds me, I had Hart, who's about to turn 7, our grandson, out a couple years ago when he could still cross the border and all. So we're looking forward to doing that again, I guess, in 2022. Maybe we can get a big Hart and Johnny Slapshot match going on.
I'll tell you what, man.
By the way, we haven't touched on that this morning. Big news this the first week of November, it looks like the land border will be open.
I was just about to mention the U.S. land and sea border reopened to non-essential travel in November after a record-long closure. But, Timmy, what made me think of you is that so flying back and forth has just been no problem. But the driving back and forth has been an issue. So my question is, how did the snowbirds get their cars down south? Did they just have them shipped?
The two main ways we're getting them shipped, for sure, which we did and which we've got prepped to do. Now we've got to revisit it. And then there were also, and you guys mentioned this on the show before, people who took the helicopter just kind of across the border, car got dropped over there, and then they drove the rest of the way.
Yeah, nothing like having some money. Let's talk about Tim.Niblett at RaymondJames.ca. He's the retirement Sherpa, and Dan Durant, for sure, like a lot of people, could have definitely gained by your acumen years ago. Let's talk about a great tax-saving strategy, and at times wealth creation one, too, something called flow-throughs.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Let's do that.
I think we should, only because this is part of our plan for today.
That's all I'm prepped for. You can't ask me about powers of attorney or anything like that.
Right. Can you set Britney Spears free for frickin'?
So we often talk about it at this time of year, flow-through investments. You can invest them all year long. Unlike a RSP, it's a calendar year to make the tax deduction. So they're investments in energy, in minerals, base metals, and so on, in which the government encourages exploration in this area. So they give a lot of tax credits, and the credits flow through to the investors.
Interesting. And that, how does that compare to a RRSP?
So with an RSP, you only have a certain amount of room, of course, Fred. It's dependent on your income, whether you have a pension plan and all. These are arguably unlimited. And one area these come in really good for, too, is if somebody has used up all their RSP room, but makes enough money that they would still want to have some more tax deductions. This is usually the second, not the first, but, you know, there's a couple other great ways that it differs from an RSP. Now it's a more concentrated asset class, so there's a little more risk or potential because of that. But you can reinvest the same money over and over again and still get tax breaks. Our RSP, you know, one and you're done, and then you pay a lot pulling it out at the other end.
You say it's not TFSA eligible, but it is. It does have the ability to repeatedly save taxes on the same investment. I'm not sure I understand that.
Yeah, so here's a cool example. Let's just say you're in the 50% tax bracket, not quite accurate, but easy number to remember. You invest $100, you basically get $100 in write-offs. Sometimes it could be more, sometimes marginally less. So you get $50 back. Let's say it breaks even. Now, sometimes it goes backwards. I invested in one last fall, and it's just come out at break even, which is much more than break even after tax. So you've saved $50 on the first $100 you put in. Now, when that rolls out, you can choose to reinvest it if you want to and get the tax breaks all over again. Hmm. So you'd get another $100 in tax breaks in this mythical example.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would also have to pay tax on half of the gain because you've written it all off to begin with. So you're paying tax on $50, but you've written off $100. So the same $100 you put in to begin with, I know this is kind of a verbal numbers thing, Phil's on it for sure, but now you've netted out another $50 in deductions on top of the $100 you first had with the only 100 that you've put in.
Well, so yeah. It sounds so good. It sounds so good. I'm surprised the government hasn't crushed it already.
Maybe like you and I, they can't really figure it out. But it is a conversation to be had with our friend Professor Nibblesworth. And don't think Phil's keeping track. Phil's watching he's watching Squid Game in the original Korean during this program.
But even Squid Game has TFSAs and certain deductions and.
Thank you, Phil.
Sure.
Retirement Sherpa, now, here's the thing, and there's a lot of moving parts to tomorrow evening's anniversary. Where are you going to be? Do you have a client right after the show? Are you going to be hanging around? I just wanted to give you a shout to sort of see if we can squeeze you in just to say hi to everybody. And
yeah, with pleasure. You can give me a call, whatever works.
Like, what time are you teeing off today? What time is Men's Day?
A little bit of worky before my 11 o'clock tee-off time. I don't know if I still get to use my captain's parking spot after the last Men's Night is over.
Well, that's up to you and your God.
Better check.
But Timmy, I mean, as soon as we shut down, which is going to be in about 10 minutes, let me just give you a call and we can kind of, because we've got a schedule in place. And anyway, we'll just talk about it, okay?
Sounds great. Looking forward to it. I was going to bring us a nice bottle of scotch to enjoy there, Fred, but Howard's barred me from the door.
That's right. Well, Fred's not going to be here now. That's the thing. Because of these microphone issues, I'm not sure if you're aware. Fred's going to be at his place. Phil's at his place. Dan's going to be here because I need some technical backup. Boone's going to be firing off all the clips from his place. So there is no, there really is, you know, only Dan and I getting high. So it's not the same thing.
Well, Tim, come to Brampton and we'll get shit-faced at this table.
Exactly.
There we go. Now we're talking.
All right, Timmy, I'll just give you a shout in about 15 minutes. Tim.Niblett at RaymondJames.ca. It's the kind of, as I mentioned before, even if you're not looking to change advisor, that's fine. But you might want to have just another perspective on what you've got going on. And maybe Tim could offer, you know, a couple of ideas for things you haven't thought of. Tim.Niblett, RaymondJames.ca, the retirement Sherpa now entering his, I don't know, how many years have you been with us? What's the...
I think at least five. I think it's got to around five now. Yeah,
I would think.
Wow. Well, it's been great. And if we don't, and tomorrow night, we're not going to have a lot of time, but I'll just say today, what a great relationship it's been for us. Me personally, friends of ours, Dave, Rachel, so many people that have used your services, so many Humble and Fred Hundy peas. I really think it's the quintessential example of a win-win for everybody, and hopefully you feel the same.
Yeah, thank you. No, it's been absolutely awesome and always, obviously. And two more new families joined the family yesterday, one from the Dave tree, actually. And one with my U.S. licensing. So it was a nice start to the week.
Well, when Fred was at Glen Cairn yesterday, as we drove through the parking lot, he goes, "Where does the Sherpa park?" And I'm like, "Yeah." Mm-hmm. He actually said, "Is the Sherpa here today?" I said, "No, you'd know it if he was." Mm-hmm. You'd know it. All right, my friend. Thank you.
Enjoy and profit all. Congrats in advance.
Thank you, my friend. It's Tim Niblett. All right. Before we finish the show here, it was interesting talking to Tim Daniels yesterday. He came hot with all sorts of information about what was it? Heart rate variability. What was that yesterday? It was Phil, were you not listening?
When you think your heart's ticking properly, it may not be. Basically.
Well, the good news is you can find out if you have the health gauge. We're wearing the Phoenix. That's the latest watch from healthgauge.com. Whether it's pulse wave, velocity, activity levels, blood pressure, oxygen saturation, or your heart rate variability. I think that's what it was. All these things can be monitored not only on the phone, but on your watch. It works with the phone. You can keep your health data. Next time you've got a checkup, you could literally go to your doctor and say, "Hey, here's a little recent history of my ECGs and my blood pressure, oxygen saturation, and more." Find out more at healthgauge.com and use the promo code HUMBLEFRED15 for 15% off at checkout. Healthgauge.com. It is the revolution that you've been waiting for. And, it's a handsome timepiece as well, Fried.
Most assuredly. Most assuredly.
Very handsome. All right, Felicia. We're going to wrap up here in a second. I guess I could play you this. You want to hear some Keith Olbermann?
Sure. Where's he nowadays? What's he doing?
He does a YouTube thing now, doesn't he?
He does a YouTube thing. I follow him on Twitter. He's really good. He's really funny, too. He not only, he's one of those guys that's so smart, but he can be funny because he is smart.
Right.
So he's responding to, hey, Joe Rogan, nice to hear you paused, because I guess Rogan recently got vaccinated. I don't know the story. But it sounds like it says, Oberman's saying, hey, way to pause. Nice to hear you paused from gargling goat urine or whatever you did instead of overcoming your fear of vaccine to call me unhinged. I guess he thought... he thinks Oberman's unhinged. But here's an interesting perspective that Oberman has. He just got his booster shot, which I guess at some point we're all going to avail ourselves of.
Sure.
Canada over 82% vaccinated now.
Mm-hmm.
But here's an interesting perspective on why anti-vaxxers even exist.
Booster shot. Mission accomplished. And it is. It is time to stop coddling them, the ones who won't get the damn shot already. And our first step, you and I, is symbols, the language we use. We call these people vaccine hesitant, vaccine skeptics, anti-vax. We say they're protesting mandates and passports. They're making a personal choice. They're waiting for more information. They're making a medical decision. Bullshit! They're afraid. They're afraid to get vaccinated. Stop feeding their egos about what they're doing. Stop legitimizing it. Vaccine hesitant, they're afraid. Vaccine skeptics, they're afraid. Anti-vax, they're afraid. They're protesting mandates and passports. They're afraid. They're making a personal choice. They're afraid. They're waiting for more information. Afraid. They're making a medical decision to be afraid. The snowflakes are afraid. Afraid of the vaccine. Afraid of being proved wrong. Afraid of doing what anybody else in the world tells them to do. Afraid of needles. So no more pleasant euphemisms about what's going on here. Apart from the people who have legitimate medical complications about vaccines, we have to stop coddling the morons who will not get the shot. We start by calling them what they are. They are all snowflakes and cowards and idiots and losers. And most importantly, they are afraid.
There you go. How you like that take? That hot take.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, I love that.
No, because part of the, you know, even people that have been vaccinated say, you can't label those people. You don't know what they're going through. And, you know, and like, you can't, you know, it's personal choice. And, you know, you can't be critical. And it's like, well, yeah, I like what I just heard from Keith Orman, because I had this conversation with my son-in-law the other day, because he brought that up. He said, I'd love to know how many of the percentage that haven't had it are just afraid of getting a fucking needle.
Yeah.
And I bet you it's significant.
Yeah, and they have, as he said, it's like this, they're hiding behind this whole my body. You know, that whole my body, don't tell me what to do with my body. Mm-hmm. And out of the same asshole you hear, women shouldn't get the, you know, shouldn't be able to get aborted. Fucking, it's unbelievable to me. You know, we've sort of stayed away from U.S. politics. And I had written down to talk a little bit about what Trump had talked about at his last asshole rally about Ashley Babbitt, and she's an American hero. She's the woman that was shot. You know, the fact that he took time to talk about the significance of Ashley Babbitt and forget the 9 people that died that day trying to protect the senators and Congress people from being killed. But he singles out Ashley Babbitt. But that's who we're dealing with. It's, you know, the United States of morons. Anyway,
One other thing, yes, we're dealing please. With. You talk about the perfect storm, Howard. Like, it's energy costs, food costs in the United States right now. Like, a lot is going south. Whether you can blame it on Biden, probably not. You know, it's all this stuff is so cyclical. You know, Trump caught a good cycle. Maybe Biden's catching a bad one. Whatever the reasons are that, you know, again, energy costs crazy in the United States drives the average citizen bonkers.
yeah.
when the price of a gallon of gasoline goes up. The point being here, if this doesn't turn around, it won't matter what Donald Trump says or thinks. Or
no, I know.
It'll just be by consolation he's reelected.
And because the average person isn't smart enough to see that what's happening now is we're now going, we're getting the effect of 20 months of a pandemic.
Right.
It's nothing, you know, it has nothing to do with Joe Biden. No matter who took over now, we're getting the effect of having the economy shut down for 20 months.
But one thing I will say about Biden, it may have nothing to do with him, but given his presence, again, that cognitive thing, that's not helping the situation either.
No, I know. Well, again, but you, you know, and again, no one seems to remember how discognant, whatever. Anyway, tomorrow, so there's no show tomorrow morning, or is there? Anyway, the big broadcast will be 7 p.m. tomorrow night, if we can. Basically, it's just going to be a bunch of us sitting around listening to clips from people wishing us well. If you want to be part of it, you can check it out on Facebook Live. And if you don't want to be part of it in real time, that podcast will be up, I guess. Should we just drop it tomorrow night, Phil, when it's over? Should we wait till... You want to wait? Okay, well then, if you're willing, Phil's going to put it together. And by 9:30 p.m. tomorrow night, a brand new Humble and Fred show celebrating 10 years will be on the air. Thank you, everyone. Phil.
This episode of Humble and Fred is brought to you by the Retirement Sherpa, Dick Sky, The Chambers Plan, Health Gauge, Bowdog, and our newest sponsor, Doer, D-U-E-R, the presenting sponsor of Humble and Fred's 10th anniversary podcast. We stream to the planet from the remote headquarters of the Humble and Fred Show. More Humble and Fred tomorrow night and online at humbleandfred.com.
All right, everyone. See you then.
That was a good drum break. Pick yourself up off the side of the road with the elevator balls and you whip flash tones, members only.